Howdy, folks. Thanks for joining me again. So this week we have a very special episode, very close to my heart, where we get to talk to my Reclosure organizer group, co-organizers, that's the word I'm looking for. So I will introduce them and then let them do a little blurb about themselves. First, we have Bruno.
Hi, I'm Bruno Bonacci, one of the organizers of the London Reclosurians. I'm mostly focusing on the online talks, so preparing every 2 weeks a technical talk from our community, really.
Awesome, thank you. And next we have Renzo.
Hi all, so I'm also co-organizing Reclosure, but I'm mainly involved with the conference more than other activities that the London Reclosurians has.
Awesome. And last but not least, we have our friend Powell.
Hello. I've been a member of this community for some time. Very grateful that it exists and been helping out with the conference for the last couple of years, I guess. And it's been a pleasure to do that. It's a great team.
Awesome. And I'd like to give a shout out to those who weren't able to join us for the podcast recording today, but we have some other folks that are super impactful in this mission. I'd like to thank Daniel Slutsky for his massive impact in this project. We also have David Harrigan. We also have John Practicali. So this is very special because we have opened the CFP for talks for Reclosure. It will be the weekend of December 3rd to 4th. And we have some topics that we'd really love to share with y'all. We've picked a theme for this year. And, this is really a community-oriented conference. And so we'd love to share with you some of the origins, the roots, the story, and hopefully have some of you as attendees. And hopefully get some submissions for some awesome talks. So with that being said, I kind of want to back up to the origins. I always kind of assumed that this was an extension of the London Reclosurians group, because I'm familiar with you folks as London Reclosurians meetup organizers. Is there an association there, Bruno?
Well, the London Reclosurians groups actually starts in 2009. So the Robert Rees was the first organizer, the forefather of the London Reclosurians. And in June 2009, he posted in the Yahoo groups a message saying, "Oh, there is this new language. We are organizing a closure dojo just to learn about things. So if you know anything about this new language, come along and let's play together." And this was end of June 2008. And Robert Rees started the group, but pretty much he was followed from the beginning by Bruce Darling. For many years, Bruce Darling was the kind of grandfather of our community, and he organized monthly or every 2 weeks meetups and dojos. And the organization was always very open, so anyone that had an initiative could just come and say, "Hey, Bruce, I want to do a closure training," and they would be, "Oh yeah, of course, go and do it." So the way we were organizing at the beginning was to use a Google group. And then we had a mailing list where we used to have a discussion and chat. And then we had a fixed location for our meetups and dojos. When it was in 2016, John Stevenson, John Practicali, decided to then open the meetup.com group. Just to give the Reclosurians a little more visibility. There was the issue was that people were saying, "Yeah, in London, we know that there are Reclosurians, but it's really hard to find, how we reach them, how to join them, or what do we do?" And by opening the group on meetup.com, He gave a lot of visibility to the group, and we grew very quickly and very steady. And John has been organizing then from 2016 for like 4 or 5 years, weekly dojos, and together with some partner companies, and we've been growing steadily ever since. And then, Renzo, maybe you want to tell a little bit about the story of Reclosure itself?
Yeah, sure. So it's an interesting story. It's like an emergency, a rescue story. So in November, somehow in November 2019, like 1 month ahead of the local Closure Exchange, which is a conference that used to be organized by Skills Matter. 1 month ahead, I was saying, Skills Matter declared bankruptcy. With that news, the conference that was about to happen was no more, out of a sudden, from the night to the day. And people were already booked in with flights, tickets were sold. The entire machinery was moving forward at that point. And so with that news in mind, a few people started to discuss on the channel, is there a way to prevent the disaster, or at least do something about it? Because, you know, these people already paid for everything. And the idea was maybe we should, the worst that can happen, we just find a place where we can all stay together and continue the conference in one way or another. So a few people started discussing exactly how to do this and which way to do this. And I was following the discussion, and about a few days later, I had a discussion with my employer at the time, because one of the most important things was to find the venue. The priority number one was to find a venue where to go together and do something and continue, hopefully, the conference. And I was able to find the sponsor, essentially, for the venue. From that point onward, the conference went forward. We couldn't really call it Closure X, because that was maybe a trademark, but maybe not. But it wasn't the same conference at all. So we had to decide for a different name, and that was when the name Reclosure was born. I'll stop here.
Wow. So that's really interesting. So not only is it community-based, but it's also, we really embrace this kind of, this motif of evolving over time. To that end, can I ask about how the conference has changed over time? Because it, as you mentioned, it was kind of started in person this year, and then the last year I was involved, it's virtual. And I know internally we've talked about doing a hybrid approach, or whether to do in-person versus virtual. Is that a question that gets revisited every year?
I've benefited from, to me, I don't want that to get lost. Like in what Bruno is saying, I picked up the thing that there was a dojo or closure meetup in London every week. So I want that to kind of sink in, because it's been a privilege to be part of that community, kind of learn closure through that. So that's been my experience as well, just going to all those dojos and in the sort of John Stevenson era. So post to 2016 and so on. So I was always super, super grateful that we have such a healthy and helpful and nice community. And there's different kinds of things for people wanting to learn closure. So there are Closurian gatherings with talks. There are dojos, which are more hands-on. People were involved in organizing Closure Bridge for introducing new people to the language. So there's a really, really healthy community. And I kind of benefited from that, and a lot of people benefited from that. So it always kind of makes me happy when we kind of revisit this discussion about doing this virtual conference, initially out of necessity, right? But always kind of makes me happy that we continue with this, because I feel maybe not every city. I would love to think that every city has this kind of healthy community of Clojurians, but I'm not sure if that's the case, right? So I always kind of feel like it's a great thing that we can do this kind of online thing, and whoever has, you know, internet connection, and it's a free conference and so on, can kind of join in, be part of that community, and you can get to everyone. So it always kind of makes me happy. And this year we could have went another way. Like, maybe it's not a necessity anymore to do an online conference. But we've, you know, decided otherwise. So I'll just, you know, this is just what I want to say. So I'll get back to you, Renzo, I guess.
In terms of evolution from the previous Clojure Exchange, well, definitely what changed is that it's now a free conference. Clojure Exchange used to have a steep price. That was one of the critique that was moved to the conference at the point, not to like remove from the merits of skills matters of bringing together like such a powerful Clojure community in London, based in London. It was definitely a core aspect of the growth of the community in this area of the world. But yes, there was some discussion regarding the price of the conference at that point in time, I remember, and not all people were able to attend given that. So now it's more, if you want, more community oriented, and one of the ways we can make it more community oriented is to make it free and open for all. Another is to, you know, keep it virtual. I'm not saying that this is going to be forever, but it gave us a lot of opportunity to like spread worldwide, different time zones, have speakers and guests that we couldn't have had in other ways. So there are, you know, positives and negatives of an online conference. I still maybe hope that we are going to be personal again next year, because I'm really missing like a meeting with real people. So definitely that's one aspect that have changed compared to the previous CLOJUREX. And then other aspects, of course, was the format. Talks are a little shorter, so that means that we have more room for talks, and also they tend to be more concise. They get to the point quicker. We also have a different, slightly different initiatives. We have these forum panels where speakers can answer live their questions. So yes, it's not in person, but it's not only a recorded talk that you can see on YouTube anytime you want. There is a live part that if you attend live at the time of the conference, you're going to enjoy, and you're going to, you know, experience a little bit of interaction. So yeah, I'd say this is a little bit of the evolution over the years.
There are some amazing discussions, like in the last couple of years. There's some really, really cool discussions.
So yeah, that's really interesting to hear kind of how this has evolved over time. I can say personally that I'm very grateful that we have it as a virtual event, because that means that I can be involved. A little bit of backstory, I guess. I think it was last year. It must have been like just a couple of weeks before the conference. It was not that. And I think it was John who hit me up like, hey, you do things publicly. Do you have any interest in helping do some Q&A? And, you know, of course, I jumped at the opportunity, and I'm super grateful that I did, because now, you know, this year I'm kind of a proper organizer. And it was just a wonderful opportunity to talk and learn yeah, so I'm really happy it worked out that way. But it's interesting. I think if I remember correctly, it was something about kind of having like time zone support, because obviously most of you are based over in London, over in Europe time zone. And as someone who's based in the US, you know, I remember I was able to kind of, y'all had been working all day, talks still needed, talks kept coming chugging, but I was, you know, there with fresh morning enthusiasm when y'all had been working all day on it. So that's
very true.
Yeah, so it's pretty accessible. But
yeah, another advantage of doing the online things was so at the beginning, it was based in London. It was always in person. So we only had the people basically that they were living in London. And so the community kind of reached a plateau around maybe 2017, 2018. But when we started to do the online talks, we quickly, no, it was during the pandemic, so there was no other option. And no, we started quickly to reach out to speakers from all around the world. And suddenly this gave the group much more visibility, and many other people from all over the world joined. So I remember once, pretty regularly at beginning of each talk, I was just chatting with the speaker, and I was just waiting for everybody else to join and asking them from where everybody was joining. And I remember there was people joining from Kazakhstan, from India, from China, from Russia, from USA, from Brazil, from Argentina, even people from Mauritius. Mauritius is a tiny island in the Indian Ocean. There is maybe 1.5 million people, I guess. And there was three developers that every week were joining to listen to the talks. And it was amazing. It's like, so such type of reach we would never have had before, just following the in-person model. So I think now it's not really London Clojurians anymore. It's like World Clojurians. We have more than 3,300 people, and they keep on growing.
With the conference, I don't know if it's the virtual format or what, but I think we have a lot of freedom to like experiment with the format as well. Like, it's not just one format that it's just one template that we kind of apply every year, and we just try different things. And last year was super successful, I think, with like putting the spotlight on data science, and with Daniel's help, Daniel Slutsky's help. Like, we had this whole month of workshops before the conference, and I think that was like one of the more amazing things about the conference. It was like, even before we started the conference, there's already so much stuff that's happened, and so many people got involved, and even like you said, just even a couple of weeks before the conference, we can think, oh, this is a really cool person. Or it's like, we would really like benefit from her help, and or like whoever, and we can just reach out and do that kind of thing, which would be really difficult for an in-person, you know, conference, to expect someone to fly over, you know, half of the world and so on and so on. So I feel like that's kind of cool thing that we can do with the virtual conference.
I will say, speak for yourself. If anybody ever wants help at a conference, I will absolutely fly out a moment's notice. I got a cat. She can basically go on an auto feeder. Nice. But nice. Yeah, that's not a luxury I think a lot of people have, so yeah, it makes sense. That kind of brings us into an important topic of today's conversation, is kind of sharing with everybody the format and the plans that we have around this year's kind of motif topic, however you want to abstract, you know, how you want to, what abstraction you want to wrap that in. And, you know, it kind of lends this topic of like accessibility, but the topic is closure growth. And I think it's so fascinating because it means different, that, you know, that those two words mean different things to different people. And I'd love it if we could kind of go around and share, you know, what closure growth means to us as individuals. I'll start off by handing it to you, Bruno.
Yeah, so obviously beside the obvious meaning, you know, that it becomes more popular, so that there is more people using the language, and the community grows, and more people means also more interesting projects, and more possibility also to work in different projects. And also by adding people, you add also a little bit of diversity into the people that come into the language with different experience. That's also something that I do ask to every speaker on their talks, meetup talks. And I ask them, you know, where they come from, which other languages, or what sort of experiences. And I can say that, no, our community is very, very open in that sense, because there is people coming from Ruby, people coming from Java, from C#, C++, Erlang. That there is very, very different background to JavaScript and all sorts of things. So new people with different background bring different ideas, and that's also really good.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. You said like, oh yeah, the most obvious meaning of closure growth, but to me it's not obvious. You know, I don't think that there is like an obvious meaning of closure growth, because I guess I'll take my opportunity to answer my own question. Is that to me, closure growth almost is more about kind of what you lent to in the second section of you know, where you come from and how you can offer that perspective to other people that either don't or do have similar perspectives. And to me, closure growth also really embodies like this concept of almost like mentorship, and like where you lie in the, you know, you can say, you know, you've been doing this a few years, or mid-level closure engineer, you know, you have a lot to offer to someone who's first getting into the language. And you also have a lot to learn from someone that has been doing this since its, you know, inception, since, you know, it's from the hands of Rich Hickey, and, you know, and I think it's really interesting to like look at these kind of like where people are and like how we can help each other grow by understanding our placement in this, you know, in by understanding our placement within the community is really what it is. But yeah, I'd love to, you know, hear what y'all think, Powell.
Yeah, I remember. I think oh, I'll just hand over to Renzo some after probably a really long rant now. But I think Daniel was in London, right? And Renzo met up with Daniel, and that kind of there was the seed of the idea of like doing that kind of thing. And it was really interesting because last year we had really sort of concrete theme with like concrete goals and like even concrete sort of niche within the language that, you know, we really wanted to focus on and so on. And this is kind of almost the opposite, and we were like discussing about different meanings of what it could be and why it's like interesting to maybe go that way, a little bit more abstract and so on and so on. I remember Renzo saying that he loves closure and he just wants, you know, a lot of people to know about it because it's great. And now it's like, oh yeah, kind of I'm sold on this now, because it just sounds to me like you know, you hear some sort of cool band or something, like you learn about a cool band and you just want everyone to know about this band, you just want to share it. And kind of closure is a little bit like that, I guess. It's just for a lot of people it's been like this big discovery, and I've heard this many times actually. It's just really interesting how many times you hear this when a lot of people have said in different sort of places, different forums and so on, that they wouldn't have been programming anymore if it wasn't for closure. Like that kind of a phrase, you know, it's just, I think it would be probably true. It's probably true for me as well, personally. So a lot of people find that, I don't know what it is maybe about closure. I think it's maybe the strong sort of focus on simplicity, and that, I mean, I could go on about this for ages, but I will just hand the microphone over to Renzo, and kind of maybe you can say a little bit more about that conversation with Daniel and how did you guys come up with this idea?
Yeah, I think also an interesting thing is that like the theme of this year is a little bit of a path in maturity for the conference. Like they started as an emergency. Let's try to make it survive and have a conference. So no theme, no thinking about, I mean, somebody thought about the talks, but it wasn't who then organized the conference, or just partially. And then into closure and data science, and then this year into like the growth theme, I think is reflecting the fact that as a conference, we'd like to do something, like have a goal that is not just, you know, showcasing the awesome projects, tools, and ideas of our community, which is great, but also, to find a way to elevate, you know, to improve each other. How can we contribute positively or like more efficiently to the community? So I was just noticing this our growth and the growth theme for me, it has essentially two meanings. One is the personal growth, in a sense, like how you mature as a programmer, how you become better, how can you absorb the technology you love. And there is also like growth in terms of raw popularity of Clojure. First of all, is it important for a language to be popular? If it is important, what can we do to make it more popular? And the fact that you want your language to become popular has to do with that fact that when you find something that is interesting for you, you like it, you are kind of, you want to be contagious. You want to go to your colleagues and friends and tell them, guys, this is really cool. You have to try it. You have to see why I'm so enthusiastic about it, why it's so exciting. So I think it has to do with both these areas. And then adopting it as a theme for the conference then is maybe even more difficult, because we are not the one who are making the language popular, even if we wanted to or if we had an opportunity to. What we can do, though, is to find the relevant people, put them together, create connections, give people ideas, and send them home with a good solid idea of how our community could grow beyond what it is already now. And then, you know, we are definitely going to discuss as well if this is a useful thing. If we are not already popular, maybe we don't know. Maybe we should know. So, yeah, our initiatives in the conference, starting from the choice of keynoters, a few of the talks, and some other initiatives that we are still defining, will be in the direction of the Clojure growth.
Yeah, I think you...
Maybe it's also identifying what are the obstacles that hinder, you know, the growth and the popularization of the community. So if we identify what is the stop the language to become more popular, maybe then we can work on solving those issues.
Yeah, I think you brought up a really interesting point. Both you, Renzo and Bruno, when we think about, you know, becoming our role as becoming facilitators for growth, and if our role is to be a support structure, an infrastructure, a facilitator, you know, it's almost like our personal definitions of Clojure growth have the flexibility to vary kind of between these definitions of like popularity versus, you know, personal growth. And, you know, and then if we think about ourselves as the, you know, facilitators, we are the infrastructure, then it becomes relevant to, you know, and inspect the obstacles that we could face, to your point, Bruno. And then, you know, that's, we kind of have more of a, I want to say, zoomed out perspective, which I hope will be really valuable to the community. I mean, obviously, y'all are doing something right, because, you know, as you mentioned, kind of touched on, I think you definitely have to have one of the most successful meetup groups of Clojure that I've ever heard of. And it's something that, like, my other side project, you know, my other kind of content where we have these discussions of, okay, how do you emulate? You know, I've even brought up in like our, you know, Clojure camp/council discussions, like, okay, you know who's wildly successful? London Clojurians. How do we emulate that? Because it's, you know, it's awesome. So it's, yeah.
Bruno might be available for consulting
yeah.
services if that's necessary.
Yeah. It's so let's put some like some year, some I'd like to
hear. Can I say one other thing, because I think that's been a big part we have not mentioned this, but it was a big part of discussion around the growth theme. But Bruno kind of touched on this. If you kind of think through what Bruno is saying, this is going to come up, but I just want to say it explicitly. We kind of talked a lot about like getting people into programming, maybe, or sort of educational side of things, right? And improving the beginner experience in Clojure, or that side of things. Because I believe there might be a little bit of misconception out there, and sometimes you see those posts recently on Clojureverse. I've seen something like this, and my experience definitely has been that. It's not necessarily a difficult language to learn. Some might argue it's very simple to learn as well. Not only just simple in its design, but also kind of not that difficult to learn. So I think that might be a misconception that's kind of hurting Clojure a little bit, if we really think that growth is so important and so on and so on. So I think, you know, in our thinking about the program and so on and so on, we talked quite a bit about education and the beginner experience and those kinds of things. So I think having those kinds of talks would be really important as well.
Yeah, and let's think about what that looks like. I think that's a really good point. So, you know, obviously to your point, like we would like to have more people attending that are kind of starting off their journeys, whether it be with Clojure or with programming as a whole. But let's also highlight that also means if you've never given a talk before and you've kind of always thought like, oh, well, that looks cool. And you've always, you know, but you're not really sure how to go about it. This would be a wonderful, wonderful way to try experiment with, you know, sharing your knowledge. We're using a very common platform, Sessionize, for, you know, to give in a proposal. And as someone who kind of does this stuff, if you create a Sessionize profile, that will lend over into other opportunities, which is our hope. That's kind of what we want, is that, you know, to help facilitate people at the beginning of their journey and connect them with people later in their journey. And so, I just wanted to highlight that we're looking for not only in attendees, but also in speakers. We would love to hear from some different folks. Do y'all have any thoughts on that?
Even beyond Sessionize, just send us an email, because you might not be familiar with the submission process, the CFP. And I believe there are people who never spoke at a conference that have incredible good ideas. They have nice, interesting side projects. They're just not interested, or I think that one major obstacle is that they might not understand what is interesting to others to hear about, and they might have very good material but they don't know. So I'm encouraging anyone who is doing something on the side, maybe related to Clojure, and to get in touch, and not thinking necessarily about the CFP process and what needs to happen and so on and so forth. And the only thing that we can do is offering our time, our expertise, and help you bring up together like a topic that you can maybe show us at the conference. So that would be really great.
So can I ask, what is the best way, you know, let's Cindy, I'm making up a random person, Cindy. Cindy is hearing this and Cindy's like, oh, I have wanted to talk about this method I developed for testing. Well, I'm not sure how to go about this. Renzo just said to contact them. How does Cindy contact us?
Yeah, maybe the easiest would be to send an email to organizers@reclosure.org. A message also on Twitter would work, but it would probably be public. Maybe you don't want to necessarily show the kind of question you're making. So the email probably is the best.
Awesome. There.
And maybe we should also mention the Discord, but we have a conference Discord, and unfortunately, it's not as easy to spell out the link here, only audio. But that makes me remember that perhaps we should just stick that on top of the website, so we can just say it's on the top of the website.
Yeah. Let's also talk about kind of the importance of, you know, there are several ways to engage with this conference, right? You can, I think last year we did like a YouTube live stream. The conference happens like on Zoom, but just recommendation as somebody that's in on this, you will get the most delightful, best experience if you join the Discord server and you ask questions there. That is a really, that is like an A1 best experience for this conference, is to engage on both levels, you know, engage on the Zoom and then also join the Discord. And the Discord has a different channel for each talk. And as organizers, we're looking at the Discord channel. We are sourcing questions from you. Like that is a direct line to getting your question asked. And that's really going to like just provide the best experience as an attendee. If you're interested in the best experience, I don't know, maybe you're not. But yeah, is there anything else that we can talk about that may kind of like tips and tricks to help people improve their experience, either like at any level of this, whether it's through the CF, you know, improve their experience putting in a proposal, or improve their experience as an attendee? Any tips and tricks?
You were saying that you can ask questions in Discord, and I encourage everyone to do this in Discord and just hang out in Discord, because there's a lot of cool people hanging out in that Discord as well during the conference and after the. So during the talk, you can ask questions, of course, but after the talk, the conversation continues, and normally there's the speaker in the chat and you can, you know, ask even more questions. So I mean, because it's a virtual conference, we try to do everything we can to give you some kind of an experience of being in the same room with other people. So one part of this is Discord. The other part is maybe being active on Zoom, just having your camera turned on. And if you're so inclined, if you prefer to do that, versus Discord, you can ask the questions yourself during the Q&A section after the talk, and so on, so on. So any kind of participation and just hanging out with others and bonding in that way, it just adds to the conference experience, I think. And of course, don't be shy to ever just reach out to us, before the conference, during the conference, and so on, and after the conference.
Actually, I think the first time I ever talked to Renzo, it was just a cold message in the middle. Maybe that was like the first when because I went to Reclosure as an attendee. And then last year I was like co-host, I'd say that. And then this year, like, you know, co-organizer. But yeah, I think the first time I ever reached out to you, Renzo, I'm like, oh, is that Reborg? Oh my God, that's Reborg. And I just send a direct message. So yeah, don't be shy. Do that. We're happy to.
What was the message? Was the message? We now need to know what the message was.
We could probably go back in the chat, but I think it's just like, yo, I like your steal your face icon. Like, I think it was, you know, just an opportunity, because I'd seen, you know, I'd seen the stealing and noticed.
I think that's a perfect example of how to get the most out of the conference. Just engage with everyone, people you like or people you have, you know, you kind of admire their work in some way, you know.
Indeed, another way to get involved, if it's not on the speaking side, is on the organization side. So always welcome to talk with people who have ideas. We get quite a few suggestions by email or sometimes Twitter, or like other kind of messages of people are like just having good ideas, and normally we get in touch, we chat, we can get some time together, explain each other. So that's also like a very good thing.
Maybe worth having a think about questions for our keynote speakers as well, maybe ahead of the conference or something like that. If you really want to go in depth or something, maybe that's something to you know, worth doing.
Yeah, yeah. And that can bring us into a nice little segue into, we'd love to share with you about this year's keynoters and, you know, kind of why we thought they were really great choices and how they're relevant to the topic. And yeah, to kind of take the opportunity to talk about our keynoters. So the first one, I'll just start her off since I'm already talking, I guess. The first one, and I feel like this needs no explanation, but we thought about Clojure growth, and we're like, okay, what does this mean? Who relates to Clojure growth? And of course, I think it was like unanimous. Alex Miller is, you know, synonymous with the words Clojure growth. And so, you know, I guess that's, I almost feel like I'd like to elaborate on it, but I can't even find the words because they're just so, he's been so instrumental in helping grow the language both inside and out, and both in popularity by creating documentation and also growth actually responding to people's like Slack messages and confusions and, you know, both aspects he just embodies. I'd kind of like everybody to share how they feel that Alex embodies this concept. I'll nominate Bruno. You haven't talked in a while.
Yeah, Alex is kind of the silent, you know, machinery behind the Clojure releases, the Clojure merges, you know, the ticketing and all the really updates, and he is behind all this, and I don't think we give as a community enough attention, enough space for Alex to, you know, enough love directly to Alex, because he's been doing an amazing job for the past few years, and so that's why we are really, really, really delighted to have him here this year speaking as a keynoter for Reclosure. And that's I think is going to be an amazing opportunity for the London Clojurians and everybody in who attends the conference to have a direct access to the Clojure team and to probably the person in charge of the community growth in Clojure. So there is no best person than better person than Alex.
Feels like Alex is everywhere, whatever some Clojurian is in need. There is, Alex Miller shows up. It's brilliant.
If I had to think, who could best answer the question? Does Clojure needs to be popular? How popular is it at the moment? What are, you know, what is waiting for us in the future in terms of growth, and how the team at Nubank is doing at this stage? What is going to grow? Is it going to be bigger, and so on? So all these kind of questions can go to essentially two people. One is Alex, the other is Rich, and I definitely trust Alex to have exactly knowing exactly what the situation is and give us, you know, like a good update on what to expect for the future. I'm also like inviting Alex to if he wants, of course, to collaborate with the rest of the core team, bring on anyone like Gadi, like Fogus, like Stuart Holloway, or anyone that maybe is available that can also give his opinion. That would be great. That would be like a kind of a little update from the core team regarding the future of Clojure. That would be really great. But of course,
the more the merrier.
The more the merrier, yes.
And I was kind of, I was thinking about this tweet. I even posted it on our Discord about, I think at some point Alex tweeted that the reason he he loves closure is because it made him fall in love in programming again. And I was like, just kind of ties in for me to this thing we talked about at the very beginning, about people still programming because of closure, about simplicity, and about that being superpower of closure, and that really kind of resonates with the theme of growth for me, and that's kind of I feel like that's, if people say that kind of those kinds of things about the language, like other people need to know about this language. I think he's the perfect person, of course, to have as keynote speaker this year.
Yeah, I think it was a very natural choice, and let's reiterate, maybe we'll be surprise core team member attendance, we'll see, maybe. So our second keynoter is someone that I wasn't as familiar with just because of, you know, my background, but we've invited James Gosling, who's now at AWS, but he designed and implemented the first version of Java, which obviously has very strong roots in our community. Another kind of tie-in, he's the author of the first Emacs to run on Unix. So all you Emacs users, you know, you thought the Sussman quote from last year was good, that this year hopefully we'll get some good quotable things. But I think y'all have more to share on James than I know. Let's start it with Bruno again.
Yeah, that's, beside being one of my personal heroes now, I couldn't believe it when even Renzo told the organizers that we had James Gosling within our keynote speakers. That is definitely an amazing achievement. And who best person to talk about the growth of someone that wrote one of the most popular languages in the world? So I think that is is definitely, he knows one thing or two, maybe about popularizing a language as well. So I'm really, really looking forward to hear what he has to say, and for an interesting chat as well, definitely.
Yeah, I would add that. James is. It's a hacker, essentially. He's a Lisp hacker, so he's connected to us also in this other way. So he knows Lisp very well, of course, with Emacs. And the other interesting thing is, he's the author of one of the most popular language ever. He's also the early author, and the language maybe was popularized beyond what he intended to do with that language. I want to hear about that. And maybe he can tell us exactly what how he feels about this, like, Java popularity, where he went. Does he think that was a good thing? Was it a better thing? Or was it a bad thing? And was there anything that could have been done differently to change things? Or maybe this is the way it is, and is the best way that could ever happen to Java. So it could really give us like a good idea of what to expect from a huge popularity and what can go wrong. So I'm really looking forward to his keynote. And he was super excited about the topic. So hopefully.
So what excites you the most about this year? You know, we've been meeting like every couple of weeks, kind of talking about all these concepts of growth and where we want to, how to do the conference this year. And, what's the thing that keeps you motivated and keep you, for everybody, it'll be a different answer. But, this is something that we don't get, paid to do or anything. It's just our time that we spend. So we all must have different motivations. I know mine lends to just, I just love giving back to this community, because this community has in turn been so supportive of me. And the more I can support other people in their growth, because kind of to go back to your metaphor of like, oh, this band is so good, you have to hear them. you know, I just feel like this is a really, the community has been so supportive and great of me that I just want to support it back. So that's what I, well, plus I get to be a total cheesy handball like I'm being now on the podcast. but those are the deeper reasons for me.
I can say a couple of things and maybe then a couple more and then even more than that. But the first thing that came to my mind when you asked this question was, what's really exciting for me right now is that we don't even yet know what the shape of the conference exactly is going to be. We know a lot of things, but we always kind of try to do something better. So I think that's the kind of unknown sort of creative part of organizing the conference. I think that's kind of what's interesting for me on one level. On another level, I think you got to be ambitious about this. So we want to make, you know, the best conference possible. But I think that also kind of applies to the language. We already have an amazing language and we have amazing community and so on. But there's always ways to be better, right? Like in that and growth in that sense. We don't have to, like, it doesn't necessarily mean just numbers, but like just being better people and in that community and so on. So I think there's always an ambition with us in this conference, and that's why I'm kind of happy to be involved, and I'm hoping to be involved, you know, in the future, because I feel there's a lot of ambition about helping out the language and making a conference. It's just not, oh, we're making another conference. It's just, we need to do something that's also kind of exciting for us and exciting for other people. And I'm super excited for this. What can we do for beginners? And the thing I talked about, the misconception about Clojure being difficult language. I'm really interested, you know, how people who are new to programming maybe, or who came to Clojure from other languages, how they perceive it. So I'm just interested in hearing those kinds of talks when we get them. And of course, I'm always super excited for the keynoters. Another thing that we can really do really well, I think, with the virtual conference, just try to reach out and ask politely some of the people, like Bruno was saying, that are our heroes, right? So and then sometimes they will agree and they will be even really excited about the conference. So, and I'm also excited for the run up to the conference and the actual day. It's always an amazing experience getting everyone in and the sort of rush of like interacting with everyone, you know, seeing that everyone, making sure that everyone enjoys the day and feels great and so on. So I like that the conference days, they're really long and they can be really intense.
I love it, like last year. You can't even describe, you know, that feeling you get when like you're not in focus mode, but you are in focus mode and you're going like bump, 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 like, because us organizers behind the scenes, we are working cohesively as a well-oiled machine and unit. And the fact that y'all don't notice means how well we're doing it, because we are communicating on a Google Doc asynchronously because some of us are on camera. We are scanning the Discords, looking for questions. We are trying to divvy up who's going to ask what question. You know, there is the audio visual of like putting on the music at the right time, and then also the making sure it's going to YouTube, and like all of these things are spinning plates and we're all like, oh, it was so fun. Yeah, it's such a special, awesome feeling that like, oh yeah, we're killing it.
Yeah, so some people also gave, you know, live talks. You always have to, all the situations, all the contingencies and so on. So that's an added excitement always.
It's like a live recording studio or a live TV studio. Sometimes it reminds me of that. You need to, it doesn't look like from the outside, because you think, you know, it's a virtual conference, it's recorded, who cares? But yeah, from behind the curtain, we are doing all this work of synchronization, you know, start with the tape, stop with the tape, call the live person that for the next live talk and so on. And it's really difficult. Yeah, it takes this like a lot of hours. And yeah, there are the panels, prepare for the questions, ask the right questions. Yes, it's a lot of work. So yeah.
Yeah. Bruno, do you have any thoughts on kind of this, the stuff we're talking about?
Yeah, for me, I kind of have maybe two different reasons. One is maybe a little bit selfish. No, I like closure. I have a startup that works in closure, and I need also to have engineers that work with me in closure. So the more people they do closure, the more chance I have to actually keep on doing closure myself, because I cannot do all the projects on my own, and it's sustainable only if you find enough people then to carry on the work with you. So that is obviously a very selfish reason, but for me also is I really want to learn a lot. No, I want to learn everything and anything I can. I really like improving myself, learning new things, learning anything I can. And so every time I go to a conference or even just watch the video of a conference, I want to finish the conference and live with the sensation that I want more. I want to know more about certain things. And I think so far, at least with Reclosure, we've done a good job, at least for me, because every edition of Reclosure, I went away and I said, these things is really interesting. I want to know more about it. And I went to explore more about certain library, certain topics, or certain specific talks. And in our community, we are so blessed that we have so many interesting people that are doing so many interesting projects. And for me, it's like a really, it's a really easy way to get all this knowledge without having to search for it. Now, you have all these smart people in one place, just use them.
It's part of the mind expanding sort of experience. Like, that's kind of what a lot of people are looking. And I think closure is kind of, closure conferences are special places for that kind of thing as well. And I think after the last year, I've read somewhere online, it wasn't a closure place, maybe it was some sort of Hacker News kind of thing, or probably not, but it was someone commenting on our conference, but not on a closure forum. And people were like surprised, like, how is Stephen Wolfram speaking at this conference? Or like, why Gerald J. Sussman's? Like, isn't that closure conference? People were so surprised, and there's like, and then somebody else came who was maybe like had passing familiarity with closure and so on. Oh, those like closure people, they really like that kind of thing. And I felt like that's kind of a compliment, I think. It's just, to me at least, it was just, they like this kind of mind expand, like really kind of listening to great people that have something to say in sort of mind expanding way. Yeah, definitely, we like that kind of thing. So I think that to me kind of resonates with Bruno, what Bruno was saying.
Yeah. So we're kind of getting to the end here, and hopefully, I think there are a lot of really great insights that people can draw from hearing, like from the behind the scenes. But I would like to kind of, on a closing note, go around and kind of hear. So this is essentially a call for proposals. That is, we're releasing this. The CFP is open. We want to see as many people to submit their thoughts as possible. I'd like us all to share about what we would like to see in talk submissions. We have a review process that is documented. It's in the Sessionize. But, to kind of just give people, and this relates to what we just shared about what we, why we do this. But if we give everybody a little bit of what would really make your day to see reading an abstract? For me, it's getting these kind of newer, fresher folks that weren't previously as involved and really have some great experience to share, great things to say. It doesn't need to be, so often we see these talks that it's like, I made this library and this is how to use it. That's a wonderful, that happens. That's the majority of talks we see at technical conferences are kind of around this. I made a thing, I'm gonna talk about the thing. But guess what? You don't have to have made a thing to talk about. I'd want to see submissions from people who haven't necessarily made a thing. Just share your thoughts. As long as you have some good insights, that's totally valid. And I'd like to validate those people. I'd love to see submissions like that. With that, I'll pass it off to Pavel.
Oh, thank you. I just like the balance of a good program in the conference, I guess. The spirit sort of design composition and performance, right? Luciki classic. So it's like composition of the program. So I like the balance of having, and we say that in the call for proposals, like we would like to see both, like super beginner talks about and learn about like what the journey of learning programming or journey of learning closure is, to some super deeply technical talks that, you know, we have not heard about, like this kind of a thing, and it's just something to research after the conference, and it's just puts another research topic on your to-do list. But so I like a nice combination of those kinds of things. So that's what I would like to see overall. So everyone, you know, the bigger the diversity of topics and speakers and so on, the better, I feel, because we'll just get more perspectives. And I don't think there's a better way to think about this growth topic than just really going wide first and just seeing what are the different points of view. And so on. So I really want to see that kind of diversity. And in terms of the submissions themselves, I think we put out some guidelines as well. But the general thing, when we were kind of reading an abstract, I like to be able to visualize the talk straight away from the abstract. Like what, you know, how this talk's going to look like, what's going to be the format of the talk, where it begins, what's the middle of the journey, and then what's the end of the journey, and so on. So maybe that's just a tip for submitting proposals. Just give us, you know, paint a picture of what the talk is going to be like, so we don't have to guess too much, but we can clearly see, that this is something super valuable that we're going to have on the conference.
I will add my thoughts as well. My suggestion for submitting a talk, not just our conference, but maybe any other, is to try to be essential, at the same time not to remove important information. So it's a difficult trade-off, but essentiality, I think, is quite important. And I think the abstract that I like the most are normally structured in three parts. There's like a context, like a first paragraph that is giving me a context of why the talk came about, if there are connections to the past, if there are not, a little bit of why, essentially rationale. The second part is what is the talk about? So it describes what is going to be in the talk. And the third part is the takeaways. What is going to happen after the talk is given? What is going to last? What people can take away? I think if it has these three parts and it's just using the right amount of words, I think it's very effective. So that's my suggestion.
Yeah, I can say it is hard now to add anything after your three other pretty much the everything. So I would say, you know, I go to a conference to see new mind-bending things, things that I didn't know and maybe I didn't explore before. So I'm trying to understand the new possibilities. Yeah. So if you're using closure in a context that is completely new or uncommon, I would say, yeah, or in a novel way, or you have something very particular, then just let us know, because this is part of what a conference is about, to let people know that there is new different ways to use closure. And the beauty of closure is that being also not a single paradigm language, but multi-paradigm language, you can come up with a completely different way to use it and still be totally closure.
Yeah.
Totally
yeah.
Closure.
Well, I hope that we've given folks enough, enough of a starting point to jump off of. So please give us your proposals. You can go to reclosure.org and there should be links there. Again, it's on the Sessionize platform. If you are a part of that, it should be searchable on there. You can also email us at organizers@reclosure.org or join the Discord. You know, we'd love to hear from you in any capacity. On that note, we hope to see you the first week of December, and stay tuned. The easiest way right now to that we, you know, give communication back to you folks is the Twitter. If you want to stay current, follow the Reclosure Twitter, because that's primarily where we post things, you know, information out to you all first. So does anybody else have any last thoughts they'd like to share? No?
I think you, summarized it perfectly.
Awesome. Well, on that note, it was wonderful talking to you folks, and we cannot wait to see you. See you next time.
Thanks a lot, Jordan.
Thank you, Jordan, for having us.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.